Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 8 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Deadline for spring pre-registration is April 21st. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tall grass prairie is our dominant native ecosystem in Iowa. It once covered about 85% of the state. Now the remnants of that original prairie cover less than 0.1% of our land. The tall grass prairie is among the most altered and threatened ecosystems on the planet. But these days, more Iowans and others are embracing native prairie plants in their yards and their landscapes. Later this hour, I'll talk with Daryl Smith, founder and retired director of the Tallgrass Prairie Center at the University of Northern Iowa. He'll give us some practical advice for bringing prairie home. But first, Cindy Crosby and Thomas Dean have co-authored the new book, Tallgrass Conversations, In Search of Prairie Spirit, out now from Ice Cube Press. Thomas Dean is senior presidential writer and editor at the University of Iowa. Cindy Crosby is a prolific author and teacher and a prairie steward at two different sites in the Chicago region. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And Cindy, thank you for being here.
Hi, Charity. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Cindy.
And this book is a collection of essays and beautiful photographs. I wonder, can you tell me, Tom, how this idea came about and the concept behind it?
Okay, sure. Both Cindy and I had essays in John Price's collection, The Tallgrass Prairie Reader, which came out a few years ago from University of Iowa Press, and we got to know each other through that. And I grew to admire Cindy's work in her blog, Tuesdays in the Tallgrass, her photos as well as her wonderful writing, and I had a greater interest as time has gone on in photography as well. So we decided at some point we should maybe work on something together, for including both photos as well as writing. And we talked about it for quite a while, a number of months, different ways in which, you know, this book could come together. And eventually we landed on this idea of looking at a number of different concepts. And that's where the chapter or conversation titles come from: majesty, mystery, remnants, possibilities, and so forth. And but we wanted it to be interactive, so that's where we came up with the idea of Tallgrass Conversations. So the book is the idea of conversations at its heart in a lot of different ways, including Cindy and I interacting with each other in our writing and photographs and responding to each other. And our hope, too, is that this will inspire others to enter into their own Tallgrass conversations in whatever way. And we wanted to really focus on more than the environmental and ethical aspects of prairie, but also emotional, aesthetic, spiritual. So trying to encourage people to look at and interact with prairie in a lot of different kinds of ways.
Well, and Cindy, I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about your background and when you first encountered a tallgrass prairie.
That's a great question. Well, the first time I saw a tallgrass prairie, I had moved to the Chicago region kind of kicking and screaming. I didn't want to live in the suburbs, and little did I know that the tallgrass prairie would capture my heart. I used to walk on the Schulenburg Prairie at the Morton Arboretum in Lisle, Illinois. It's just outside Chicago. And as I walked and looked and kind of soaked up prairie, I wanted to know, what is this place? You know, one of my friends that I took out to the tallgrass prairie, he went out and looked at it with me. He's like, oh, this is just a bunch of weeds, Cindy. And that was a great comment because I thought, you know, so many people view the prairie this way. It's just a bunch of weeds. It's a big mess. You know, and the prairie has so many stories for them that might resonate with their personal journeys. The prescribed burns that annihilate almost everything in their path. A lot of Iowa and Chicago prairies are being burned this month. The new growth that fills the prairie with green. The home and community that the prairie has to offer. So it's really been a joy to be able to share it in this way through the book.
Well, and I'm curious, Cindy, you know, It's an understated landscape. It's a landscape that a lot of people, you know, maybe they look at it and just see a lot of weeds. But it's also a landscape that it's easy to take for granted. And it's hard to feel lost in a wilderness of prairie because so many of our remnants or our reconstructed prairies are so small. And of course, you can see for miles. You can you don't have trees blocking the rest of civilization. So was part of this idea to help people really find the joy in this wilderness landscape, even though it's a wilderness landscape that doesn't block everything out?
Well, I would say Tom and I both have a passion for sharing the natural world through words, images, and experiences. We're looking to engage and connect people who maybe doesn't look at a prairie and say, so what's that all about? Images are a big part of that, I think, right now, because we're so used to seeing, you know, full color photography everywhere we look on the internet. And sometimes for someone to look at a prairie wildflower up close, the Pasque flowers right now are blooming on both prairies where I'm a steward, the pale purple, they're kind of furry. The new shoots of green grasses are coming up. It's a great opportunity to connect people with their landscape of home. And in Iowa, as well as Illinois, where I live, I mean, Tallgrass Prairie is our landscape of home.
Tom, when did you first encounter the Tallgrass Prairie?
I actually grew up in Illinois, excuse me, and have lived in the Midwest all my life. And I write about this in the book at some point, but I really never even had much of a concept of what prairie is. And I probably first encountered prairie in writing. I have a literature background and was interested in Midwestern literature. And so it really came to kind of going out and finding these places after reading about them. And I went to graduate school here at the University of Iowa. So the prairie at the Hoover National Site is wonderful. And going out to that.
In West Branch.
In West Branch. And the Neil Smith Wildlife Refuge, and which is, you know, probably the first time I encountered a particularly large prairie. That is a place where you get some sense of that sweep of the prairie. So I came to it, even though I grew up in the Midwest, I came to it a little late as well.
And what made you fall in love with it?
Partly, I think, as Cindy said, it's just the sense of the landscape of home. I feel really deeply rooted in the Midwest, and this is what the native landscape is. But the grandeur, we often think of the prairie, I think, Charity, you even said, is kind of a subtle landscape. But at the same time, when you do get that sense of wideness and the broad sky above it, it's just kind of awesome in a lot of ways. At the same time, you can get down into the small particulars, as Cindy talked about a little bit, and just the beauty of the grasses and the flowers when you really look closely and look at on a small scale. It's just an endless wonder to encounter the prairie in that way.
Cindy, you write about a wonderful encounter that you had when you moved to suburban Chicago with your backyard neighbor, Dr. Is it Gerald Wilhelm?
Yes, it is. Yes.
All right. So tell us about him and tell us how you first encountered him.
Well, I've always been a gardener. I'm a master gardener. And for me, whenever I moved, the way I put down roots was to plant a garden. And I had moved to the Chicago region. I understood that the prairie was my new landscape of home. So I was trying to find some prairie plants and put them in my garden and get to know them. I mean, so much about Tallgrass Prairie is relationship, spending time with different components of the community, learning the names of the plants, you know, planting them. And so I was in my backyard, and this nice man came out, and he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm planting prairie plants." And he said, "Oh, bless your heart." you don't see that a lot in the suburbs, although it's much more common now. And little did I know that Dr. Wilhelm, of course, is a genius, a taxonomist here in the Chicago region. And his book has been a mentor for me as I work as a prairie steward and learn the plants and the other communities of the tallgrass prairie.
And so you encountered him, of course, as a neighbor, and he had a yard that your other neighbors like to complain about, right? Tell me about his yard.
Oh, too lazy to burn or too lazy to mow. That was what my next door neighbor said, because Jerry, you know, uses prescribed fire in his yard and has a permit to do so. And for some of the neighbors, you know, seeing someone's yard go up in flames, it's a total mystery. So one of the things, you know, I would hope by just exposing people to the idea of prescribed burn is it's not your neighbors are too lazy to mow. They're actually stimulating that original landscape of home to grow and to flourish in a backyard. And I have a very small prairie patch in my backyard, but it's nothing like Dr. Wilhelm's yard. It's been fascinating to be able to learn from him. And I always hope some of his plants will see themselves kind of downwind into my backyard. So he has some great plants.
So we have just a few minutes or about a minute and a half left before our break. But Cindy, I'm curious, how long do you really feel like it took you, once you started trying to learn about this landscape and how to care for it, to become a knowledgeable prairie steward?
Well, Charity, it's a lifelong adventure, and I think any prairie steward would tell you one of the joys of working on the prairie is the things you can learn out there are limitless, from working on the prescribed burn crew to right now we're trying to introduce the eastern prairie fringed orchid on one site, which is an endangered species. I'm working with the Heinz emerald dragonfly on another site, and just, you know, the insects, the mammals, the birds, the way the prairie changes from one day to the next. There's a rhythm to the prairie, but there's also mystery, and that captivates me.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Cindy Crosby and Thomas Dean. They are the authors together of Tall Grass Conversations in Search of the Prairie Spirit. It's out now from Ice Cube Press, and it's a book full of essays, a little bit of poetry, and some beautiful photographs. And you are welcome to join this conversation. If you'd like to share what the prairie landscape means to you, give us a call, 866-780-9100. We will continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, my guests are Cindy Crosby and Thomas Dean. Together, they've written Tall Grass Conversations in Search of the Prairie Spirit. It's a book full of essays, a little bit of poetry, some really, truly beautiful photographs of the tall grass prairie. And if you'd like to join in our conversation, we'd love to hear from you. We're talking about their relationships with this native landscape. We'd love to hear about yours. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Tom, earlier we were talking about how you sort of came to this landscape a little later in life. This wasn't something that you grew up dreaming of or loving or, you know, wishing that you could see 150 years ago. But you have gone through a process to become a land ethic leader through the Aldo Leopold Foundation. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, what led you to pursue that?
Aldo Leopold is, you know, one of the most important conservationists in the 20th century and, you know, really of all time in our modern times. And I've known about Leopold and for a long time, and then been discovering in the last 10, 15 years more and more that he is an Iowa native, born in Burlington, and his influence on his growing up years, his childhood, and even beyond were really influenced by his time in Burlington. So I came to know and understand Leopold and became very interested in him. And the famous shack where he and his family did a lot of prairie and woodland restoration and sort of a holy grail kind of place to visit, I was always curious about that. And the program, The Land Ethic Leader with Aldo Leopold Foundation, which is located there near the shack, just seemed like a really interesting way to connect with Leopold, but then also to learn more about, you know, what it means to be environmentally conscious, to follow Leopold's land ethic. So I went and went through the program and have been very happy to do that, and have gone to a number of Leopold programs since then.
The prairie landscape, as I mentioned, there's very little virgin prairie left in the United States. But over the last several decades, more and more people have been working hard on creating reconstructed prairie. And we've learned so much. I mean, my family started working on trying to reconstruct a native prairie 35 years ago. And just the knowledge base that people have about how to do that and what a prairie really is so vast now compared to what it was then. But Tom, first I'll ask you and then Cindy, when we recreate this landscape, can we recreate what the tall grass prairie was before settlement?
I think the short answer is actually no. Others that were more expert than I can probably answer it better. But it's always different. It's always probably not going to be the same mix of plants that there were in the native landscape, and certainly the fauna that was there is an important part of it. We're not going to necessarily be able to recapture all of that. And I mentioned Leopold, and he was the first, in some ways, was one of the inventors of the idea of ecological restoration. And the first prairie restorations are at the Arboretum at the University of Wisconsin and on his private land at the shack. And his family, it was failure. All they did was they went and found some native plants in ditches and along railroad tracks and literally dug them up, which you can't do anymore. but back in the 30s, you could. Dumped it on the sandy soil, got buckets of water from the Wisconsin River, and a lot of it didn't take hold. So a lot of it is difficult to do. It is, trial and error and figuring it out as we go along. But even now, we're never going to quite get back to what the native landscape was. And of course, that changed over time, too. And you have to, figure out a particular point in time that you're trying to restore.
Well, and different areas had different prairies.
Right.
Even when you visit the different plots of virgin prairie in Iowa, they're so different from each other. Cindy, do you have anything you want to add on that?
Oh, absolutely. I think my work as a prairie steward is to restore community and function to the tall grass prairie. And the one prairie that I am on is a planted prairie. It's the fourth oldest planted prairie in the world, behind, as Tom said, University of Wisconsin-Madison's. And we, rather than restoring it back to a particular time, I like to think of it as restoring it forward. We take these plants, we take the pollinators, we take the mammals and the amphibians, and we try to get that community as healthy and as high functioning as we can. Nechusa Grasslands has about 200 plus acres of remnant prairie, and that's in Dixon, Illinois, not too far from the Iowa border. And for example, the studies that researchers have done on these remnant prairies or virgin prairie, the unplowed prairie, tell us that there is community there that we are unable to replicate. And as hard as we try, we can't get that same function back to a planted prairie. So I think the work of our children and grandchildren will be to figure out how to do that. And meanwhile, that remnant prairie, that virgin prairie, that unplowed prairie is so precious. Don't ever let a developer tell you, oh, we'll build a shopping center over here, but we'll plant a prairie over there, because it is not the same thing. And that was one of the most valuable things I believe I learned from Dr. Wilhelm.
We're talking about the new book, Tall Grass Conversations in Search of the Prairie Spirit by Thomas Dean and Cindy Crosby. We'd love to hear from you, 866-780-9100. And Barry is on the line in Indianola. Hi, Barry.
Charity, how are you doing?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
I wanted to make a plug for the county conservation boards in Iowa, specifically the one in Warren County that's just south of Des Moines. The county conservation board there has both planted prairies, and there's one plot that's never been plowed. I think it was pasture land at one time down by New Virginia that's over 200 acres, and it's been burned since the 80s. So there's starting to be a rebirth of the prairie species in that plot. But some of the other plots, the planted plots, range in size from a few acres on up to 80 acres at a time. So if a person goes to these places, they can get a sense of the space of an open prairie, even if it's a planted prairie. And the other thing I was going to say was that there's been a lot of talk about prairies lately. My father was a prairie ecologist and taught botany at Drake in Des Moines beginning in 1964. And so I was a tag along when I was a kid on these weekend horrible trips to the prairie. And he had a plant collection that was his first project in 1964 through 66 or 67, was to catalog just in Polk County. This was even before the Sailorville Dam was built, the native plants of Polk County, and made a collection, which has since disappeared. So it's been around for a long time. It's just that more people are getting more in tuned, I think, to it in these days.
Oh, absolutely. Barry, thank you so much for sharing that. And I am sure that our guests would also echo the incredible importance of the work done by county conservation boards all over Iowa, all over the Midwest. Really, I want to turn to talking about the prairie throughout the seasons. I mean, both of you have spent a lot of time in prairies. Clearly, for this book, you took some very intentional journeys to different prairie plots to gather your thoughts and really mindfully take in your environment. But, Tom, I would love for you to read a poem that you wrote about April. And I think we can start with spring in the prairie and just kind of move through the seasons, because it's not that the prairie is living and then the prairie is dormant, but there's a lot going on. So, Tom, why don't you read your poem for us?
Okay, thank you. This is from our conversation that is called Transitions. And this was from a visit to the restored prairie at Prairie Woods Franciscan Spirituality Center in Hiawatha, Iowa. And much of this has to do with water, too. And we haven't talked a lot about water, but obviously water is a very, very important part of the prairie ecosystem, but includes more than that. April is small, but it is rising. The taut, reedy chorus frog song is rising, up its scale to the stars. The creek water, still shallow, is rising after last night's rain. The blue stem is rising green and spare, infant spears among the yellowed elder stalks. The prairie grass is rising from mud, held deep for its upward journey to light by waking roots, long, wide, and wise from time. In April, we are small, but we are rising, emerging from the humus, where lies the dilating humility of our unseen beginning. We ask of ourselves the same we ask of the grass, the flower, the tree, the frog, the water. How high, how wide, how deep, how colorful, how beautiful.
Thomas Dean reading from Tall Grass Conversations. And Cindy, you recently put up a blog post about walking in a prairie that had been recently burned. And you mentioned earlier, of course, this is the time of year. A lot of prairies do get burned to go through that renewal process. And a blackened prairie doesn't necessarily look really inviting to go walk in. But what do you feel we can learn about spring in the prairie from walking in a newly burned prairie?
You know, a burned prairie is such a powerful symbol to me. Right now, the prairie is just starting to green up. But 2 weeks ago, after we burned the Schulenburg Prairie, the landscape was reduced to nothing but ashes, skeletons of small mammals, and all the litter that you don't see, old bottles, old cell phones, you know, that someone had lost, weeding tools. Then rain comes. And sun and snow, if you live where I do, surprisingly today, we just got 5 inches of snow yesterday. But all that water soaks the prairie, and you start to see that new growth. And I love that cycle of the seasons. It always speaks to me that so many beautiful things can come out of what looks like, to most people, utter devastation. I never get tired of it.
Well, and even if you're walking in a prairie that has not been recently burned, you're seeing the new growth starting to poke through the dead grasses. Tom, what do you like to look for this time of year?
That promise of the new. It's always a very interesting time because you're also looking at the growth from last year that is decaying and going away, and then that beautiful green color usually at this time of year. I like what Cindy said about planting forward, and that is a reminder every year in the springtime that we're always moving forward. Then there always is that promise. And then, of course, as Cindy also mentioned, the flowers will start emerging soon, the Pasca flowers, and soon the all kinds of other wildflowers, shooting star, will be arriving here next month. And it's always great to see the first emergence of what we want to come and enjoy every year.
Well, and then during the summer, it's kind of a riot of life. There's always something in bloom, something different, something coming. Some of the plants can get so very tall. And of course, you see so many insects and other kinds of wildlife in the prairie. Cindy, you have a lovely poem that you wrote about the compass plant. Would you read that for us?
Oh, I'd be glad to. And if you have some listeners who don't know what a compass plant is, it's about 6 to 8 feet tall. Native Americans used the sap. It has a very gummy sap in it as chewing gum. So it was kind of the Wrigley's spearmint gum of its time. And it also had a lot of medicinal uses. But the main attraction of the compass plant was that the leaves would point north and south. And this is a drought strategy by the plant, but it was said that early pioneers could find their way across the tall grass prairie by using those directional leaves. And Charity and Tom, I would say I would not depend on that if I was watching the prairie. But it is interesting to see that as an adaptation. So this comes from a section Tom and I wrote called Direction, and the title of the poem is Compass Plant. Come, I know which way to go. I've spent my life pointing everyone in the right direction. It is so good to be certain, so decidedly right. It rids you of unnecessary anxiety, worries, indecision. Like, what about this way? Take this road? That one? Or maybe just sit down? Or risk, risk, risk. Deeply rooted in my confidence, I tell you, go here. It is the proper path. Do not turn from it. If you choose badly, it is only because you did not listen. If I tell you the right direction to go, then why, oh, why do you keep asking these endless questions?
And that's Cindy Crosby reading from Tallgrass Conversations. I think a lot of us, obviously they think about the prairie as being an exciting place to be in the summertime. But one of my favorite times to visit prairie is in the fall. There is so much color change and so much beauty in the prairie in the fall. Cindy, what do you see in the prairie during that season?
It's it's like your favorite child. It's like, it's probably one of my favorite seasons. The light is starting to close. The grass is tall. The juice is beginning to drain out of the plants, and they're starting to rattle and hiss in the wind. Willa Cather talked about the sea of grass. Prairies get compared to oceans and to water, and for good reason. You watch the wind go through that tall grass prairie in September, and you see all the metallic colors of the grasses and the last goldenrods and the last deep purple asters. And it's just like waves going across the prairie. And you can see the life of the prairie coming to a close. And there's a certain melancholy aspect to that as you go into that tunnel that's going to be those short winter days. But there's a certain beauty in that, too, that everything is coming to a close, that you've gotten through a season and experienced everything the prairie, had to tell you, to offer you. and you have that new season to look forward to.
Well, and speaking of that new season to look forward to, you both spent time in prairies in the wintertime for some of your essays, and we only have about a minute before our break. But, Tom, that's a time of year when a lot of us avoid going to a place without much windbreak, and it's cold out there. What do you find in a prairie in the winter?
That was one of the big surprises for me for the book, was how much I really enjoyed the winter in the prairie, which as I had not visited as often. And in some ways, it's the starkness. It has its own beauty. You know, it's not quite monochromatic, but getting there, but that has its own beauty. And it really helped me listen as well. I think Cindy mentioned some of the sounds and the sound of the prairie in the winter, the reedy grasses and the rattles. It's unique and it's wonderful in the winter.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Cindy Crosby and Thomas Dean, authors of Tallgrass Conversations, In Search of the Prairie Spirit. It's out now from Ice Cube Press. And they'll be at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City coming up on April 22nd at 7 p.m. So an opportunity to hear some of these Tallgrass Conversations in person. Daryl Smith is going to join us in just a moment, the founder of the Tallgrass Prairie Center at the University of Northern Iowa. And you're still welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 8 race events, including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Deadline for spring pre-registration is April 21st. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the Tallgrass Prairie, our dominant native ecosystem in Iowa, although there's not much of it around today. It's one of the most altered and threatened ecosystems on the planet. With me this hour, Cindy Crosby and Thomas Dean. They are the co-authors of Tallgrass Conversations, In Search of the Prairie Spirit. It's a book full of essays, a little bit of poetry, some very beautiful pictures of prairies, many different plots of prairie throughout the Midwest featured in the book. And also joining us now is Daryl Smith, founder and retired director of the Tallgrass Prairie Center at the University of Northern Iowa and one of the leading experts on this ecosystem in the world. Daryl Smith, hello.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today. And Daryl, before we kind of dig into the nuts and bolts of bringing this landscape into our landscapes, you have been working in prairie reconstruction, protection, and restoration for so long. I'm curious, can you give us your perspective on how our understanding of this ecosystem has changed over the decades?
Well, I think it's interesting to comment. When I first became involved with prairies back in the early 70s, there were things going on in Iowa related to prairies, but not very much, and I could keep informed of all the activities in the state. And since then, the activities in the Iowa have just grown so much of people involved in reconstructing prairies and restoring prairies and studying prairies and having prairie meetings and this sort of thing that it's just blossomed. I can't keep track of all the interest in it in the topic these days.
That's incredibly exciting. And of course, we've learned so much about the native plants and how prairie differs in different environments and the oak savanna ecosystem and so much over the years. What do we still not know? What do you feel are the big questions that we still need to be asking?
Well, I think we have to keep studying the prairie because I find something new every time I go out to the prairie. But we've got pretty good idea of the basic things that are necessary for reconstruction or restoration. The main thing now is to convince the population, the people, more people, that it's an important thing to do.
Let's talk about bringing this ecosystem into your environment, because a lot of people are feeling that it's more important. They're starting to understand the power of these native plants as far as, you know, supporting habitat for so many creatures. Insects are among the very important creatures supported by this habitat, but birds, etc. So if you want to introduce prairie into your landscape, and let's say you live in an urban or suburban area, Daryl, what do you feel like you can do?
Well, I encourage people in that situation, you know, just to plant a small patch of prairie in your backyard or your front yard, make it a part of your landscaping of your lawn. For example, I have some milkweed, butterfly milkweed, growing along the south edge of my back porch, and now we have monarch butterflies that come in and lay eggs on it. And so there's an opportunity. It doesn't have to be very large. If you can find a space for some prairie plants, that's an ideal thing to do. And then some people are controlling their water runoff from their roofs and creating wet spots in their lawn, and that's an excellent place for a small wet prairie planting too.
The you mentioned the butterflies, the milkweed. Do you feel like a small plot of native grasses or native plants, even if it's not connected to any other plots in the neighborhood, do you really feel like that makes a difference?
It does. It does, because those plants can move around. And actually, where I live, there aren't any other prairie patches very close. There's some woods not too far away, but to find a monarch butterfly, I hadn't seen any in my backyard for years until we put the butterfly milkweed there.
These days, there are so many different resources that you can go to acquire seeds and native plants themselves. Other than planting milkweed, how do you decide what native plants you want to plant in your yard?
Well, there's a lot of information available now. The Tallgrass Prairie Center has a lot of information on planting prairies. The Iowa State Extension has a lot of information about how to plant prairie patches and this sort of thing. We have a book that we wrote a few years ago called Prairie Reconstruction in the Upper Midwest. So there are a number of resources available. Your local extension agency will probably have some information if you're interested. And there are quite a few nurseries now that have some knowledge about prairie plants and prairie species.
Do you have any warning for people? We have had, we do Horticulture Friday every Friday here on Talk of Iowa, and we've had people over the years who decide they want to plant native plants and then find that they do really, really, really well. So maybe they have cup plants that are 7 feet tall and are taking over their yard. Do you have advice for people about choosing native plants that actually work in the environment that they're living in?
I'm chuckling because I've had that happen to me, too. So, yeah. The problem is some of these plants are part of a larger ecosystem, and when you have a small patch, there are some plants that do sort of run amok, and a cup plant is one of them. Another one is oxeye. There are several plants that do that, and so I would suggest that you do talk to someone who knows a little bit about prairie restoration and reconstruction, Extension or Iowa State Extension or the Tallgrass Prairie Center, and find out about which are some plants that you should leave out of your mix. Because when I advised people, I said, if you've got a list of plants you're going to plant, send them to me and I'll check off the ones that I recommend you don't plant.
Okay, so you can keep that prairie in check if you need to keep it in check. In urban areas, I know that Cindy mentioned earlier that her neighbor has a permit. He can burn his prairie in his suburban neighborhood. That's something that not a lot of people get permission to do. So if you plant a prairie in town, a place where you really can't burn, how do you get that same kind of renewal? How do you nurture that environment without the burning?
Well, first of all, you'd be surprised at how many places that you can burn with spatial permission, like that permit that she was talking about. For example, in Cedar Falls, we have an ordinance against burning, but they do allow burning natural areas like prairies, so it's worth checking that. But secondly, the best bet for that is just to cut the prairie off in the early spring, about the time that you would burn normally, and rake the material off the prairie. And it's not quite the same, but it's close enough.
Okay, so you can do that without burning. Russ is on the line in Des Moines, and he has a question about burning. Hi, Russ.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I just wanted to ask if there's ever been any analysis done about CO2 emissions when you burn a prairie, any kind of cost-benefit analysis because of, everyone's concerns for climate change.
Yeah, there's been studies done, and I can't really cite any specific thing, but I think for the most part we have so little prairie remaining that any burn is not going to put too much carbon emission into the atmosphere. I think that the trade-off, the following, the surge of growth that you get from the planet prairie is going to replace that CO2 that was added very rapidly. And I think your overall gain will be more than you put into the, that you take out of the air will be more than you put into the air.
I see. One other question.
Sure.
The typical prairie, how often, what would be the sort of the minimum times that you would need to burn? I mean, how often, every year or 2 years or three or what?
Well, it depends a little bit on the soil type, but if you take the average soil type, the return interval in the past was about every 3 years. So that's what they usually recommend, is about every 3 years. If you've got an extremely dry site, then you burn less frequently, maybe every 5 or 6 years. Or if it's a very wet area, you might burn every other year or something like that. But you don't need to burn every year.
I see. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Russ. And Daryl, of course, when fire came naturally to the prairie, it didn't just come in the month of April. It came when it came. And I know that some people have been doing fall burns instead of spring burns in the last few years. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think it's a good idea. We've sort of fallen in the habit of burning in the spring because it's more convenient, because it burns so nicely about the middle of April or early April. And if you're out in an agricultural area, there's less likely to be places like dry cornfields where the fire could spread to and this sort of thing. But actually, you're right, the prairie did burn all different times of the year, and I think it's a good idea to vary the burn time for your year, because sometimes the wildflowers, or forbs as we call them, do better with fall burns than they do with spring burns. And on the other hand, the grasses do better with spring burns than they do with fall burns.
We live in a culture, of course, where we really love instant gratification, and we want to buy a bag of seeds, and we want to plant them, and we want to have a prairie. So I'm curious, Daryl, how long do you feel it takes to really establish a prairie, whether it's a small plot or a large plot?
Well, when you asked about a caution earlier, I thought that's what you're referring to, because I was going to say patience is important in this sowing, because you don't always get instant prairie. There are some things to do with site preparation to reduce the weed competition. And if you can reduce the weed competition as much as possible, the prairie will come on a little faster. But you still are going to have to wait a couple of 3 years before the prairie really starts to take a hold, because the first year, those young prairie plants are sending their growth downward into the roots and stuff. And so you'll just see little tiny seedling-like structures. And so, it does take some patience. And I've had some people become frustrated and think, it didn't work, I don't have anything. And so you do need patience.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Jim is on the line in Grinnell. Hi, Jim.
Yes, this is Jim Kessler. Want to say hi to Daryl. We've known each other for a very long time.
Yes, hi, Jim.
I wanted to ask what your involvements now that you're retired. I'll tell you that we donated 27 of our 30 acres to the Berwick Land Trust in December, which is really exciting. And we're up to about over 275 species on the property, with oak savannas and reconstructed prairies and restored wetlands. And we're working on the oak hickory woodland at this time. But and I'm still giving many talks. I want to get out into Iowa to talk with the farm community about the prairie strips concept. And I just gave a talk in Sioux City at the garden show about butterfly gardens and larger native plantings last weekend. But I just was curious about what your current involvements are now that you are retired. But I know you, and I know you aren't. You're still very involved.
And Jim, it doesn't sound like you're very retired either. So thanks for your work. Daryl?
Yes, thanks, Jim. That's good work. Keep that up. I'm still doing some field trips and some writing and talking about prairies and this sort of thing. And after 48 years at the university, I'm still cleaning out my office, too.
All right. Well, we are nearly out of time. Daryl, why should we try to plant a few native plants in our landscape, even if we can't do much?
Well, first of all, they're beautiful and you'll enjoy them. But I also think it's nice to feel like that we've got a connection with our past, because the prairie was a part of our cultural heritage here in Iowa.
Absolutely. Well, Daryl Smith, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you.
Daryl Smith, the founder and retired director of the Tallgrass Prairie Center at the University of Northern Iowa. Still with me, Cindy Crosby and Thomas Dean, authors of Tallgrass Conversations in Search of the Prairie Spirit. And I'd love to hear from each of you before we leave. You have a little over a minute each. But Tom, for people who maybe can't or won't plant prairie in their own personal landscape, what advice do you have for people to go out and experience this environment?
I would just say go. Most places will have some information about the plants and the landscape there. You learn a little bit about it, but part of what we're trying to do in the book is just to get people to enjoy it in many different ways. I've discovered even in doing the book that there are many more prairie areas, reconstructions, even native remnants around than I ever even thought of. So it's probably pretty close by.
All right. Do you have any favorite spots?
Here near Iowa City, the Hoover Prairie at the Hoover Library and Museum and National Historic Site is always great for me. Kent Park here in Johnson County is wonderful. Statewide, if you can get to the Neil Smith National Wildlife Refuge, it's magnificent.
Absolutely. Cindy, what's your advice for people who want to experience this landscape?
The poet Mary Oliver said, paying attention, this is our endless and proper work. And I would just tell your listeners that if you go for a walk on the Tallgrass Prairie and really look at what you're seeing, it will open up a whole new world to you. Dr. Wilhelm told me when I asked him his best advice, he said, Cindy, key out one plant every day. And I still try to do that. Learn the names of some of the plants, but most of all, spend time on the prairie.
And you recommend in one of your essays, Cindy, leaving the beaten path in the prairie. That's something a lot of us don't feel like we should do when we're in a natural area. What do you think we can see off the path that maybe we would miss?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a metaphor for my own life, I think, Charity. You know, learning to be more adventuresome, learning to risk, learning not to always follow the rules. I'm an oldest child, so we always follow the rules. understand what your particular prairie asks of you. Some of them don't want you to leave the trail, and I'm a steward at one of those prairies. But the Chusa grasslands, for example, encourages you to leave the trail. And sometimes it's off the trail that the most wildest and exciting adventures begin.
And I think some people feel overwhelmed by, you know, we've been talking about mindfully exploring this landscape. If you don't feel like you're going to journal or take a spiritual approach to the prairie, do you have practical advice for just a way to start to understand this landscape?
Buy a really good field guide. I use the Falcon Prairie Wildflowers. The Nature Conservancy of Illinois is one of our sponsors, and I believe the Nature Conservancy helped publish that. Buy a good field guide. Take it with you. Learn some names.
All right. We are out of time, but Cindy Crosby and Thomas Dean, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
The book is Tallgrass Conversations in Search of the Prairie Spirit, published by Ice Cube Press. And Cindy and Tom will be at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City on April 22nd at 7 p.m. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.